Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks for joining us. Donald Trump held a campaign rally in Albuquerque on Tuesday night. You've probably heard about it. Protesters threw rocks and plastic bottles of water at police, burned T-shirts, and threw at least one of those at police, prompting headlines in major news outlets across the nation and internationally about the violence. But before all of those things happened that grabbed all the headlines, hundreds of people demonstrated peacefully for hours outside the Albuquerque Convention Center. Today, we're going to talk about media coverage of the rally and protests. But first, we're going to talk about what happened with some of the folks who were there. Tylena Hardy is one of the protesters who interrupted Donald Trump's rally and was then forcibly removed from the rally by security officers. Tylena, this incident was captured on video. A KOB News reporter, Sean Griswold, tweeted a ton of videos from that night, including ones of you being removed and you doing your protest. But I don't think many people, if they haven't seen that video, would know what you were actually saying. Tell us what you said and what did you do during your protest and why.
So what I was saying for the most part was stop the hate, stop the hate, stop the hate, stop the hate. And I was ripping up Trump posters and throwing them in the air. Very flamboyantly, very making a scene, just trying to interrupt him, you know.
And then security officers came to escort you out of the rally. But before that happened, how did the folks who were at the rally around you react to your activities?
Well, I was the fourth or fifth interruption. And by then, people were getting pretty angry and starting to get aggressive. Some man pulled me. He grabbed a hold of my hair at the bangs and pulled me back toward him. You can see one man pulling my arm away from the police officers and the security.
In that video, we've posted links to some of Sean Griswold's tweets on our website, KUNM.org, so you can go check those out. Go ahead.
So when I was grabbing onto the railing at one point, someone stomped on my wrist. I'm not sure if that was Trump or one of the security or something by that
A Trump
time.
Supporter.
Yeah, or a Trump supporter, yeah.
You tried really hard not to let the security officers take you out of the rally. I mean, I saw you bracing your legs on those handrails.
Derby legs.
I wonder, were you injured when you were taken out? And how did the security officers who were taking you out, how did they treat you?
I did get injured. I got pretty banged up. I got some sandpaper rash on my back from the stairs. And some bruises all over. The security and police, I think the police handled themselves in a way that they were aware that I am someone who watches the police for their brutality and use of force. So I think they were trying to handle themselves really well. The security, I think this might have been a little bit too big of a deal for them. I think maybe their nerves got to them.
Meaning that police officers and security officers, they treated you a little bit differently, maybe based on their experience or their preparation.
Yeah.
So you decided to do your protest on your own?
Yeah, I wasn't able to make the organizing meetings because I had work and practice and stuff. Roller derby practice.
Roller derby practice. Sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
So I'm pretty used to being banged up. But
Why did you take a stand about this? Why did you decide that this was important enough for you to do a protest at a rally for a presidential candidate, so much so that you were willing to and were arrested and held overnight?
Yeah. Well, you know, we are a very multicultural state and we pride ourselves on that. And Trump's rhetoric is kind of the opposite of that. So I just wanted to take a stand and, you know, make everyone aware that this is not New Mexico. You know, even though there were a lot of people there, like, that is not what New Mexico is.
Are you facing charges for your protest?
I am. Disorderly conduct and evading arrest.
Let's pull Javier Benavides into the conversation right now. Javier is the executive director of the Southwest Organizing Project. Good morning, Javier. Hello, Javier. Can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I sure can. I sure can. Thanks for joining us. First, you protested from the stands right behind Donald Trump. 2 and you were removed from the rally. You kind of kicked off the protest during the event. What were you saying and what did you want to achieve by disrupting Trump's speech?
So I was also chanting "Stop the Hate." That was our unified message. It was either that or "We Shall Overcome," because I think we wanted to bring the perspective that, you know, this is not what New Mexico is about, the hate, the xenophobia, the divisiveness, the racism. You know, everywhere Trump goes, he creates wreckage with this, with bringing that kind of sentiment out of the woodwork. And so we wanted to say that, you know, that's just not welcome in our New Mexico, not in, in our backyard kind of thing. And I want to start by saying, by demonstrating a lot of love and respect for our community, for Albuquerque. I think, you know, we beat back Trump. We beat back his message. We threw him off his game. When he finally got to speak that night, he was very discombobulated. You know, he was speaking off the cuff. And I think it was very powerful for people to see that, you know, there are so many folks out there who know that we're better than this. And I think the responses that we saw later that night are folks who are tired of being called rapists and being scapegoated for all society's problems. I mean, that's just the message that Trump takes everywhere he goes. And we also wanted to see, like, who came out in support of that. And I was kind of fascinated by the TV media's perspective that, you know, the rally was full, because when we're getting pulled out and we actually took pictures, we looking back at the crowd, I mean, it was relatively empty. It was probably a few thousand people, but there was a lot of blank real estate between the walls of the convention center and the crowd. I mean, they designed these things to look packed, but, you know, it was kind of reassuring to know that he didn't fill the room at all, anywhere near that.
Well, so the Albuquerque Journal has reported 8,000 people showing up for the Trump rally. I think the Associated Press, the last number I saw from them was 4,000. So that's not unusual to have different levels of interpretation. The Albuquerque Police Department, in their materials that they've sent to media outlets, 8,000 is the number that they're citing. So your reaction to that? I mean, there are a bunch of people, whether it was 4,000 or 8,000, there's a bunch of people who came out to hear Donald Trump speak and to show their support for his candidacy. Talk a little bit about, I mean, that's part of New Mexico as well, right?
You know, some of it is, but there were also a lot of folks from out of town. I mean, I was standing in line for a few hours and I heard a lot of folks who even drove all the way as far as Midland, Texas to come to this rally. And, you know, I mean, the Southwest Organizing Project has been around in New Mexico for 36 years. We are founded in New Mexico's values, which, you know, we love our people. We overcome struggle. We are hopeful about our future. We love our diversity and our, you know, rich culture here and history. And it was reassuring to see that, you know, that was a minority coming out. We were all curious because we just don't see that kind of sentiment when we drive around our communities, and this was kind of like a foreign visit, and we wanted to make sure that we showed up and made it very visible that this is not what we're about. I think, you know, Trump, just knowing, like, his style and how he's going about this all throughout the country, I mean, he's a chaos candidate, and I think in some ways, you know, he thrives off of this kind of energy, but I have to believe, you know, that our country, our people are better than that. And that when it all comes down, as long as our people turn out to vote and aren't just turned off to the politics, that a candidate like him loses in the overall election.
So we did go speak with some of the folks who showed up to rally in support of Donald Trump's candidacy, and you can definitely hear some of their voices on our website, KUNM.org. Javier, you also helped organize the protest that took place outside the convention center where hundreds gathered, and I imagine that you knew there would be a lot of media attention on this event. Can you explain who you worked with to organize the protest outside the convention center, and what kinds of things did you take into consideration when you were planning the demonstration?
Yeah, so we had a very disciplined effort organizing. We knew that this event was going to bring people out no matter what, and we wanted to do our part to create a safe space for people to voice their power. A lot of these folks are people who can't participate in elections. They don't have money to contribute to candidates. So direct action is a very important part of our work here at the Southwest Organizing Project. But I definitely want to give a lot of credit to all the people who spent time in meetings leading up to the event. Louis Head, Rodrigo Rodriguez, Juan Reynosa, and many others who, made the effort to put themselves in the line of danger. I mean, if you see the pictures of the event, they're standing in between the kind of the action and the police officers or the horses. And it was definitely, we were doing our part. We can't do everything. I mean, APD had to step in after many folks went home, but we just wanted to, we knew that everywhere Trump goes, he creates this kind of wreckage, and we wanted to do our part to make sure that our people could participate in a safe way and have that safe space.
Javier, let me jump in because I want to make sure that folks who are tuned in this morning know that we're interested in hearing a wide range of perspectives on the protests and on Donald Trump's rally. Did you go to the rally? What was it like inside for you? What did you experience? Or were you outside on the street and what did you see? Call now, 277-5866. That's 277-5866. If you're outside the local calling range, you can call toll free 877-899-5866. You can also tweet us at KUNM News or email callinshow@KUNM.org. What do you think, Javier, when you see what happened later in the night, how that impacted the media narrative about the protest that you were involved in organizing? Do you think the coverage of your event would differ so fundamentally from perhaps what you intended?
No, I didn't. I didn't have high expectations. I mean, this is the way they covered Baltimore, the way they covered Ferguson. That's to be expected. But I think we've got to keep our eyes on the ball about why this happens everywhere Trump goes. I mean, remember, like, who's bringing this message of hate and chaos and xenophobia, and who's kicking that off, and why these kinds of events happen everywhere he goes. I mean, it just happened again in Anaheim last night.
Did you, when you got the permit for your protest on 2nd Street, did you intend for the folks who were attending the rally to have to kind of walk this gauntlet on a narrow sidewalk next to the protest? Was that intentional or was that by accident?
Absolutely not. No, that was the police department's design. But, it's an interesting metaphor because when I heard that, there was a lot of trauma with the folks who had to walk through that line, I thought, what about our people, immigrants? Women who have to walk the gauntlet of the hate and the xenophobia of the right-wing messaging machine every single day. Like, they're getting a little bit of taste of the world that a lot of our folks live in.
Thanks so much for your time this morning, Javier. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Elaine.
All right, take care. Let's go now to Rachel Lazar. She's with El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos, an immigrants' rights organization. Rachel, what were you thinking as the protest kicked off and as people started showing up to the convention center and you saw that folks who were coming to support Donald Trump had to kind of walk this gauntlet in between the protests and a barrier?
Good morning, Elaine. Thanks for having us on. Like Javier said, that was not our original intention. That was by design of the police, who actually asked us to rally in the place that we rallied. And I absolutely agree with Javier. Our communities, women, immigrants, Muslims, are constantly being bombarded now by Trump and other politicians' anti-immigrant and bigoted hate speech on an everyday basis, and his attempt to dehumanize and marginalize, his perpetuation of violence against these communities. And so I think the fact that people were expressing frustration and outrage and hurt is absolutely justifiable.
We're going to take a quick break, Rachel. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're talking about Donald Trump's rally in Albuquerque on Tuesday night, the protests both before, during, and after that event, and we'd like to hear from you. Did you go to Donald Trump's rally to support his candidacy? What was your experience walking into the convention center, or were you out on the street? The number to call, 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. You can also send us an email, callinshow@KUNM.org. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We'll be right back.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support comes from Corley's Albuquerque Lincoln Volvo, providing new and used car sales as well as repair and maintenance for Volvo, Ford, and Lincoln, with same-day service often available. Located off I-25 on Pan American Freeway in Albuquerque. Info at CorleyNewMexico.com.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, stories and voices of six peacemaking greats: King, Mandela, Gandhi, Chavez, Huerta, and the Dalai Lama.
Whenever we face problem, different interests, disagreement, a realistic method is nonviolent dialogue. That's the only way.
Six peacemaking greats from the Peace Talks Radio archive, next time on our program, Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
I'm Elaine Baumgartel. This is KUNM, and you're tuned in to the KUNM call-in show. We're talking with folks who participated in protests at Donald Trump's rally on Tuesday night, and we're also going to hear from a journalist who was there and some more folks as we keep going with the show. We heard just a moment ago from Tylena Hardy. She's one of the protesters who was forcibly removed from the rally, and we just heard from Javier Benavides of the Southwest Organizing Project. We're talking right now with Rachel Lazar. And really quick, before I come back to you, Rachel, I do want to make sure that folks understand that we did invite the Albuquerque Police Department to join us for the show. We did not hear back from them as far as whether they'd have somebody available or not. They did send an email out to media outlets with an update on the number of injuries that took place with officers. So we know that six officers received significant injuries after being hit with fist-sized rocks. They were treated on the scene. This is later in the evening during the protests. They were not sent to the hospital. APD also reports that there were four people who did go to the hospital, although APD says their injuries were due to falls, medical conditions, or heat, not to actions by protesters or by police, is what it sounds like to me. Those numbers don't include any injuries for folks who were part of the other agencies who were involved in policing the event: New Mexico State Police, Bernalillo County Sheriff's Office, or just a couple of those other agencies. Four people were arrested, two young people from inside the rally. APD says they were released to their families. Tylena, our guest today, who was charged with disorderly conduct and obstructing, and a 19-year-old man who was arrested during the protest outside who was charged with disorderly conduct. Rachel, coming back to you, as tensions started to rise during this protest, what were you doing to try to de-escalate the conflict?
Right. So we worked very, very hard to carve out a safe space in which Albuquerque residents could express their outrage. And again, against a politician who is encouraging and inciting violence against our communities on a daily basis with his bigotry, with his racism, with his hate speech. And so we worked together with many organizations and peacekeepers. We're really proud of the job that our peacekeepers did. Unfortunately, what we find is that a militarized police force tends to incite versus de-escalate situations. And when people feel physically threatened by the police, when they feel as if their constitutional rights to assemble and their freedom of expression are being violated, this has an escalating effect versus a de-escalating effect. And I think this is especially the case in communities in Albuquerque that have experienced police brutality and excessive use of force. So we're proud of, we're proud of our community of immigrant women and men and students coming together and really working hard to de-escalate and to carve out that space where people could express their very justifiable outrage, again, against a politician who is perpetuating and inciting violence against our communities.
Rachel, I know that you can't be in everyone's head. You're not a psychic, or at least I don't think you're a psychic. But share with us why you think people might have done things like burning Trump T-shirts, throwing things at police officers, and participating in the escalation as opposed to the de-escalation at the event.
Right. And again, El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos, we have a long history of peaceful protest, of marches and vigils and direct actions. And so we don't ever condone any use of violence, but we also understand the justifiable frustration and hurt and anger, both historical and current, right, that our communities experience when politicians like Trump insult and attack and criminalize and dehumanize our families. Again, we feel like he's the one encouraging and inciting and perpetuating violence against our communities. When you call people racists and murderers, when you encourage policies, right, that block Muslims from coming to this country seeking safety and refuge, it is his policies, right, that are perpetuating violence against our communities. And so, again, although we don't condone any type of violence, we understand the justifiable frustration. And, of course, he Trump isn't going to be welcome in a state like New Mexico, where we do things differently, where we aspire to embrace diversity, and where we've done things like worked really hard to integrate immigrants into the mainstream. And I think in all the hours of peaceful protest, that was the message that, unfortunately, the mainstream media chose not to show. It chose not to show the peaceful protest. It chose not to show, again, women and children, the faith leaders that we had come out, the peaceful protest, the ceremony that people participated in. And unfortunately, the media didn't show any of that happening. They didn't give the full picture.
I'm going to pause you real quick, Rachel, because we're going to get into that question of media representation of the events just coming up. I want to thank you for joining us this morning, and I hope you'll stay tuned as we continue the conversation.
Thank you, Elaine.
Great. Let's go to the phones now. But first, how did you feel watching national media coverage of Donald Trump's rally and the protests? Do you think you got the whole picture? Call now, 277-5866. You can also post your comments online to KUNM.org or tag us on your photos and videos on Facebook. Our page is KUNM Radio. Lines are full at the moment, but we're going to take some calls. So if you get a busy signal, please just try right back. Let's go to Joshua in Albuquerque. Good morning, Joshua. You're on the air.
Thank you, Elaine. Good morning.
Go ahead.
Well, I was in the marching protest beforehand, before the rally, and my friends and I went into the rally, got kicked out of the rally, and then we were in the protest afterwards. So I got to see like the whole range of what happened that night. And I'm definitely upset about how the media, or at least the establishment media, has portrayed the events. And I was there when, like, the violence had kind of started, and I feel like it was a much smaller portion of the entire day's events. And what they failed to show was the justified actions of the majority of people there. And they didn't show how, police officers were using their horses to trample over people. There was an organizer there with a vest, and I saw him get headbutted by a horse, and I hope he's okay. And that's when people started throwing things like water bottles. But before that, when we were marching around, there were women with strollers. I saw children as young as like 5 years old walking around. There was just a man playing his trumpet. People were just trying to show what their culture and their community was about, and that, what Donald Trump is supporting or proposing anyway, that's not what we're about. And we just wanted to express that. And there were a few rowdy people, but they also didn't show how many of the protesters and organizers were trying to calm them down. There were,
Great, Josh. Josh, I'm going to pause you there. Let's go to Jeff Proctor. He is a journalist with New Mexico In Depth for the Justice Project. Jeff, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
You were also outside the convention center from when the protests had started. You've got lots of experience covering the Albuquerque Police Department. Do you think APD did things differently because all eyes were on Albuquerque? We had all of this national media in town to cover Donald Trump's rally. Can you talk a little bit about the use of horses and crowd control and how Tuesday's events may have differed or been similar to APD's behavior in the past?
Sure. I do think that some of the way the police acted and handled the situation was different from some things I've seen in the past. One thing that I think can't be overstated is the prevalence of cameras. Pretty much every demonstrator I saw down there had one form of a camera or another, whether it was a phone or an actual camera. Not only that, the police are wearing cameras themselves these days. So a good point of comparison for that would be the Iraq War protests here at the university in 2003, where the police response to that demonstration was a very, very different thing.
They used, briefly describe the differences.
Well, in that instance, they used a lot of pepper balls and bean bags, and there was a lot of tear gas in the streets. If I remember correctly, maybe 17 people were arrested. That was also a little bit of a horse of a different color in that there was a lot of marching. In this instance, you had people in concentrated in a really kind of small area with a direct target. Here's the convention center. The guy that these folks are here to sort of protest is inside the convention center. So the anger is focused on a building, right? And in this case, I do think it's important to say that the object of demonstrators' ire in this case, they didn't have occasion to confront him directly. Instead, they were
at least the folks outside didn't.
Exactly, the folks who were demonstrating outside. Instead, they were confronted with this familiar foe, the Albuquerque Police Department. And in a lot of ways, you end up with people who are part of a community who are confronted with this police department whom they already do not trust. And a lot
just
of,
a reminder, the Albuquerque Police Department is in the middle of a mandated reform process after the U.S. Department of Justice found that there was a pattern of officers using force and deadly force in ways that violated the Constitution. That's the kind of context you're talking about.
That's
right,
part of the context. The other part of the context is behavior at demonstrations in the past, including what took place at UNM, including the fact that the police department sent undercover officers to infiltrate a protest a couple of summers ago at Roosevelt Park, those kinds of things. Now, given that frame and that broader context, I think the police handled themselves in a much different way this time. There were command level officers on scene. They seemed
What does that mean, having command level officers on scene?
Well, in the past, there's been some criticism of the way they've dealt with these kinds of demonstrations, that it all seems sort of ad hoc and willy nilly and that there was no plan. In this case, they really seemed to be constantly reevaluating the way they were going to deal with whatever situation came about. If there was a turn in what I saw happen the other night, it was kind of after some of the demonstrators got through the barrier and up against the glass doors of the convention center.
This was kind of right as Trump was beginning to speak, I think.
Yeah, maybe 10 or 15 minutes afterwards. And the police sort of let that go on for a period of time. And just as an aside, there has been some criticism of the police department that they let too much happen. A fair bit of criticism, in fact. The newspaper editorial this morning and the Journal sort of took them to task for that. Of course, they put it in other people's mouths. But I've heard that same criticism from officers I know. But in any case, the protesters got up against this glass set of doors, and they let that happen. And then it became clear that you're going to have to let, whether it's 4,000 or 8,000 people out of the convention center. And I think they wanted to really avoid some sort of a big, ugly clash. And they made the decision that they were going to start that moving back process with horses. And there's no question that
large horses.
That's right. And that is when things began to sort of shift, when the vibe got a little bit different. I certainly heard some people in the crowd saying, giving some voice to that, saying like, whoa, you guys kind of came at us with horses. And then from there, it's not acceptable under any circumstances to take a flaming T-shirt and throw it at a police officer who's sitting on a horse. That's just not acceptable. Or to take a huge rock and throw it at a police officer. That said, a lot of the word violence continues to pop up in media coverage I've seen. And the word riot continues to pop up in media coverage I've seen. Technically,
pause for a second with me on that.
Sure.
With the terminology, I want to take a few calls and then we'll come back and we'll talk about some of the specifics of media coverage. I have a couple headlines to read and we can kind of dig into that a little bit. First, let's go to Carmen in Santa Ana. Carmen, I understand that you were at the early part of the protest. You had kids with you, that it was peaceful. Can you talk a little bit about how you saw police interaction with the protest and whether you think the Albuquerque Police Department and the other agencies on hand did a good job?
Yeah, I was. Good morning to everyone. I hadn't been to a protest in probably 20 years, since maybe college, and felt so much that this was the time to stand up to the hate that that Donald Trump is spewing. So it'd been a while since I'd been to this. So I didn't know a lot about what SWAP was planning. So this is just a regular person finally deciding to come down to a protest and not being on the inside, because I think a lot of people want to think about so much of the organizing that was done in a beautiful way, and then other people who are coming down with very specific plots to do things. No, I was just a concerned citizen and a mother, went with my good friend, another Native American woman, and we went down to show our support and to be in solidarity. And everything, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. Children there in strollers, kids on scooters, elderly people. Everyone had this great empowering feeling where you smile at each other. You give each other high fives. You take pictures with the signs. Midwives came out from their convention. It was a great atmosphere. And the organizers gave us handouts about the peaceful demonstration, what to do, what not to do. They were making sure we were in the right areas. And as far as the police, when we were down there, I'm coming to it a certain way, and haven't had those types of experiences that others have had with the police. Policing of their community. So I saw the police there standing, smiling, waving, asking us, please go this way, please go that way. And I didn't have that same sense, but that's also because I'm coming at it from a certain perspective that others haven't. And they were, we left at around 7 o'clock, after we had done all the walking and the marching. And what was important, what I had hoped to see on the media, my friend who was also from Cochiti Pueblo, she was interviewed by KOT7 right after we got finished with the last march around. None of that got on the news. So I was shocked, 2 hours later to start to see what the media was covering when they didn't see the beauty. I had hoped the helicopters would show us walking through downtown Albuquerque. People came out honking cars. Business owners came out to wave. It was beautiful.
Hey,
and
Carmen,
I loved
that. Let me pause you there. Thank you so much for your call. Our phone lines are full and I want to make sure I can get to some other folks. Let's go to Becky in Albuquerque. Becky, I understand that you were part of the peaceful protest as well. We've heard kind of a description of what that was like for folks. Did you have a similar experience in your perception of how the police department interacted with protesters? Becky, are you there? All right, we'll move on. Let's go back to your point, Jeff, that you were making about the language that is being used in some of the high-profile national media coverage of this protest. And we'll also bring Nessa Leal into the conversation. Nessa is formerly of the Media Literacy Project. He's also the spokesperson for Somos Un Pueblo Unido, an immigrants' rights organization. Thanks for coming in today, Nessa.
Thank you.
We're thinking about headlines like anti-Trump protest turned violent outside New Mexico rally. That was an Associated Press headline that kind of shows this idea of a changing nature of a protest compared to things like anti-Trump thugs shout Viva Mexico while burning Trump banner. That was a Fox News opinion piece. Violent Trump rally protests not discussed at Clinton campaign event. That's from a KOAT article. So there's the way that even just the headlines play a role in defining an event. Jeff, can you talk about the term riot and the term violence and what you've seen in national and local coverage and what that means?
Yeah, I mean, part of what happened the other night technically fits the dictionary definition for a riot. Part of what happened the other night outside the Trump rally technically meets the dictionary definition of violence. I saw some violence. I saw some people who were technically engaged in rioting. Headline writing is an art. If you're coming at writing a headline from a journalistic place where you're actually trying to tell the truth but also get people interested in reading the story, it's difficult to do. A lot of those first day stories in the news media, there's a difference between sort of live coverage and with the advent of the internet, print media are engaging in this as well. And then what we call the second day story, where you sort of pull back and take a broader look at what takes place. I think some of the coverage was pretty narrowly focused on people throwing rocks at the police, those kinds of things. I also wanted to back up really quickly and say that broadly speaking, I feel like the police response to this was pretty professional, with a couple of exceptions. And then on the other side, I think that the way Albuquerque handled this, they didn't acquit themselves as badly as they were characterized as having acquitted themselves.
That's, meaning it wasn't as bad as it looked in the media?
I think that's right. And at the same time, while we do expect professionalism from the police, the First Amendment does not require professionalism. Democracy is messy. Free speech is messy. And at the same time, we are a nation of laws. And so for those people who decided to break the law, I feel like really from a 30,000 foot view, this could have been an awful lot worse, given what this was, that there were people here to demonstrate against this presidential candidate who has said things that are very, very personal for people here.
This is the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. That was Jeff Proctor. He is a reporter on the Justice Project with New Mexico In Depth. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come right back with Nessa Leal, formerly of the Media Literacy Project. This is KUNM. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the New Mexico Philharmonic, presenting Salute Under the Stars, Saturday the 28th at 8 p.m., Memorial Day weekend at the ABQ Biopark Zoo. Gates open at 6:30, tickets and more at nmphil.com.
It isn't every day we get a new or newer vehicle. Some of us hang on until they've got 200, maybe 300,000 miles on them. Nothing wrong with that. But when it's time to get the next one, how great to send it off to continue to serve not just you and your family, but the entire community by funding KUNM. Give us a call and we'll send out a tow truck, handle the sale, then send you a tax receipt and a KUNM membership. What a great ending. Call 888-KUNM-CAR.
This is the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We're talking about Donald Trump's rally on Tuesday night, the protests during, before, after that event, both inside and outside. And right now we're going to continue talking about media coverage of those protests. We posted a ton of links to coverage from a bunch of different sources on our website, KUNM.org. What media coverage do you think told the most comprehensive story of the protests and the rally? Share that with us. Good coverage is good coverage. You can also call 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM or tweet us at KUNM News. Nessa Leal, formerly of the Media Literacy Project, how are communities of color generally covered by mainstream media? And is that kind of dominant narrative something that is the same for communities of color in New Mexico and in Albuquerque?
Well, I think I just want to note that, you know, I find it interesting that, you know, that we expect mostly people of color protesters to behave and to behave professionally and to act the right way. And we don't necessarily expect that of a soon-to-be presidential a candidate, Donald Trump. In fact, we celebrate his rhetoric. We celebrate the fact that he doesn't think before he speaks and that he can say whatever he wants with his national of attention. But in terms of the media, you know, what was a very, very complex scene, both inside and outside the Trump rally, you know, became a very simplified story of these sort of violent anti-Trump protesters waving Mexican flags, clashing against police. You know, we saw images of smoke-filled images of cops clashing with protesters, of protesters burning T-shirts and stomping on cars. But we have to ask ourselves, in all this media coverage, what are the untold stories? And I think Javier and Rachel and all of the guests today are lifting up some of those untold stories. But one of the most important untold stories, I think, that was absent of both national and local media has been context. You know, why are some of these protesters, why were they so angry, right? Well, why were they so angry enough to do what they did? Well, a majority of the news media focused on these sort of quote-unquote violent protesters in very great detail down to the T. Almost no one really delved deep into, you know, why... what drove them to do this? And in fact, some of them in the news coverage said that, you know, they were simply angry at Trump, or that they were just looking out for trouble. And I think that's often too simplistic and not accurate. You know, we have to remind ourselves that we live in a state that's one of the poorest states in the country. We live in a community that. From our police department is under investigation by the Department of Justice. We live in a state where our governor puts corporations over people, that our governor attacks immigrant families. And so for a lot of people, Trump embodies those failed policies that are destroying our communities and destroying our families. And even we saw some of the difference in terms of how Spanish language media was treated differently than English language media. For example, our local Univision affiliate here in Albuquerque, I mean, the Trump campaign didn't give them the media pass until right before the rally, when all the other English language media had already received their media credentials, were already inside, and were getting ready to report. And so you see this difference in how even the media, who are Spanish speaking are being treated by the Trump campaign.
So what does it mean, Nessa, when communities of color are treated differently by the media? Even media professionals are treated differently by the organizations that are interacting with the media. What does it mean to communities of color with respect to how they're being represented? And what does it mean for audiences who are consuming that media content?
Well, you know, it's not new to communities of color see ourselves portrayed in national or local news as the aggressors, as people who don't have a strategy, as people who... who don't have a goal or are strategic. And so for a lot of communities of color, the media narrative, you know, from the very first night to the second day has begun to change a little bit because people of color, because community organizations have begun to challenge some of that narrative and began to voice their own experiences. Some of your callers are here today because, you know, we are not represented in the media, particularly in a state that is predominantly people of color.
So Albuquerque City Councilor Dan Lewis, I think it was in a Facebook post, said the violence was a direct result of organizing by groups like Progress Now New Mexico and the Southwest Organizing Project, and he called them hate groups. This was reported by KOB. Then KOB reported that SWAP's George Lujan fired back, saying Lewis was showing a lack of leadership. Progress Now New Mexico responded that their protest ended hours before the violence erupted. KOB also reported that Councilor Ken Sanchez said the violence was incited by a small group of troublemakers, not the peaceful protesters from earlier in the day. And the chief of the New Mexico State Police Department said Wednesday that the people protesting weren't the problem and that the violence had nothing to do with the peaceful protest. A link to that article is posted on our website, KUNM.org. Let's go to Andres in Rio Arriba. Good morning, Andres. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for having me on the air. I comment the last caller. He really... was really neutral in addressing some of the issues. What I saw in the mainstream media was what they allow us to see, and of course I didn't see the other side, and everybody's going to defend their side, of course. But I'm a retired educator, and I've seen, you know, diversity of different colors, as the last caller said, coming through our doors and educating them. And I saw what I was really upset about, what I saw there, was the lack of respect for the law enforcement. Regardless of what your stand is, the law still should be respected at all. And you can get your message across a lot louder by, you know, respecting and not breaking the law by what they did, because now there's going to be investigations on who did what, so forth, and doesn't make things any better. And I think Donald Trump's stand is we have a problem here in America. And, you know, he's up in the polls, and he's up there because he's telling people what they want to hear, you know. And the fact of the matter is he might just be our next president, you know. And I'm Spanish. Don't think I'm comfortable with that because my skin is brown. I don't know how far it's going to go in what his ideas are. But, you know, I'm just concerned in all areas, you know, of the problem that we live. I live in Rio Arriba. We have a major drug problem. It's obviously coming in from somewhere. And we need to address all the issues. And I understand everybody's point of view on stand. You know, I got friends that are Mexicans. I got relatives that are Mexicans. But we need to address the fact of the matter is that, you know, America stands for hard work, labor, and just free speech and respect for the law.
Great, Andres. Thank you very much for your call. Let's go now to Tom in Albuquerque. Good morning, Tom. You're on the air.
Good morning. Great discussion. Thank you. Want to reiterate some of the points being made, and one of which is that we live in a community with a police department that has incited riots for over 50 years. And yes, we all believe in the rule of law, but we have a police department that doesn't respect the rule of law, and the DOJ is here because of that.
Thank
you. Also, let's talk about Mr. Trump now is the representative of the GOP. The GOP openly and unapologetically has brought treason, terrorism, and torture as part of the American experience.
Great, Tom. Thank you for your call. I'd like to bring Dr. Gabe Sanchez into the conversation right now. He's an associate professor of political science at the University of New Mexico. Good morning, Gabe.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. You've done some media studies and experiments to explore how media coverage impacts the way people view Latinos and Hispanics in the U.S. What did you study and what did you find?
Yeah, Latino Decisions, we've actually done a couple of studies for the National Hispanic Media Association, where we essentially analyze how Latinos are depicted in the national media and what impact does that have on how folks view Latinos overall. And in line with this conversation, unfortunately, when folks are depicted as thugs, as criminals, et cetera, the wider non-Latino population picks up on that, and it really has a very, very positive and negative impact on how they actually view Latinos overall. So I think this conversation about, you know, it being characterized as a riot, and, you know, a host of criminals engaging in these activities, that's a very small segment of the overall population who showed up to peacefully demonstrate. And it probably gives a lot of folks across the country a very negative view about not only Hispanics in New Mexico, but New Mexicans overall. And I think that's one of the big picture points that I don't think has been discussed in much detail so far.
So, Gabe, I think most people would want to be able to make up their own minds about the world. For folks who are thinking, hey, how do I recognize news stories that treat different groups of people differently, that racialize people of color? And what can folks do to educate themselves or become more aware of how to avoid this?
Well, I think the most obvious point is you've got to look beyond the national headlines and actually dig into some of the richer content that's usually available online, whether that's through high-quality blog posts, high-quality content like yours this morning, to get a full depiction of what actually happened. And I think that just requires a little bit more effort on an individual's, perspective, but it's required because these days all you're going to get is the soundbite that says, you know, major violence and upheaval and riots in Albuquerque. There's obviously a lot more to that context than what was depicted nationally.
I was going to go to you, Jeff, and ask, why don't we see content that treats communities of color differently? You've been a journalist for a long, long time, and you know a lot of journalists. Why do we see this coverage that focuses on violence and that then has this impact on communities of color?
Part of this is what has happened to our industry. Newsrooms have been decimated all over the country. It's a job, I don't want to make the lament for journalism, but it's a job that doesn't pay very much. especially with local television, and this is in every market in the country, often you have folks who haven't been here for very long. People in Albuquerque is the kind of market where you have reporters who come and stay for a year or two or three. It's difficult to understand this community. New Mexico is a state that it takes some time to get that context that Gabe was talking about. And in terms of the national media who were here, they were here for a political story, right? And the political story they're covering is this Martian of a candidate that no one's ever seen the like of before. So it's very difficult to have that kind of institutional understanding of the place you're covering. And often the result of that, and this isn't an excuse for bad coverage, but often what you see is this as the result. And look, there is something to be said for observational reporting. And a lot of the criticism that we're hearing this morning and talking about is of observational reporting. And there's a place for that. What we saw on television and in those early drafts of some of the print and online stories did accurately depict a portion of what took place at this event. The trouble is the context. And it's a big ask to have reporters on the scene who really know enough and to be able to do that quickly. That's not as easy as people think it is.
Professor Sanchez, your response to that?
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. I mean, the only couple of points I would add to that is you got to remember that, you know, as those folks are traveling across the country, they're trying to write up their story on Albuquerque and then prepare for a few hours later to talk about Anaheim. So I think a lot of it is just the reduction of the infrastructure within the media that I think is leading to some of this. Now, the other point is, and this is the one that I think I've been tracking in data, you also have, unfortunately, low representation levels of people of color within the industry. And so expecting folks that don't have that lived experience to provide that context, that's kind of a tall order. So I think one of the things we would love to see, obviously, is more Native American and Hispanic reporters, editors, all the way up the chain. And I think that would really lead to a lot more of the deeper, more rich stories that everybody's hoping for and wish they could get more of.
Nessa, your thoughts?
Well, at the same time, you know, that we also need more, media outlets that are founded and operated by people of color so we're able to tell our own stories. Here in New Mexico, there are going to be some coming in the future. And so it's good that we tell our own stories, because if we don't, these types of situations have very real consequences for people of color and our families.
Nessa, what can we do as media consumers to improve our media literacy when we're thinking about coverage of people of color and coverage of things like protests and politics?
I think really dive into the history of this place. Talk to the grandparents, the elders of the community to really understand our community. Because once you know the history, once you're able to wrap your head around what has happened here in Albuquerque, then you have a better perspective of being able to analyze and offer your audiences a more holistic context, so we don't fall into the sort of blaming individuals and blaming people of color and portraying them as criminals and as thugs.
Tylina, I want to circle back to you. Tylina Hardy was one of the protesters who was dragged out of the Trump rally. What did you think of coverage of the protests and the rally? And how do you feel about being included in some of that coverage because of the protest that you did yourself and the videos that are of you online and social media?
I'm also a little bit, a lot bit upset that it was covered as a violent action when it wasn't. And it's a little overwhelming to be included, but I'd be lying if I didn't say that I don't enjoy. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't enjoy the attention.
Got it. Closing thoughts, Jeff.
I do want to say that there was some good local reporting that was done here. The Journal had a couple of reporters on scene who did a very good job. I saw some pieces on television and on television news websites that I thought made an effort to place this in the broader frame in which it belongs. So anyway, just a shout out to those who did try to do the job right.
Fantastic. Professor Sanchez, thanks for joining us this morning. Gabe Sanchez is an assistant political science professor at the University of New Mexico. Tylina Hardy, a protester who resisted being removed from the Trump rally. We also heard earlier from Javier Benavides, executive director of the Southwest Organizing Project, and Rachel Lazar with El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos. Jeff Proctor is a journalist with the Justice Project on the New Mexico In-Depth site. That's an online news site. We also heard from Nessa Leal of Somos Un Pueblo Unido. He used to be with the Media Literacy Project. Thanks to all of you who called in today. We had phone lines pretty much full almost throughout the whole show, so we know we didn't get to a lot of you. Please consider going online and posting your comments there or on Facebook or on Twitter. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show. Jefferson White engineered the show. Kaveh Movahead screened your calls. Anna Landy was on Twitter, and Marisa DeMarco co-produced this show with me this morning. I could not have done this without her. Elaine Baumgartel here. Next week, we'll talk politics ahead of the June 7th primary, and you can expect some of this conversation to continue. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks for joining us.